and welcome to the reading of the Ames Tribune for Thursday, January 28th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article from the front page, Esophagus Attack, Mark Farland Doctor author's new book by Rona Fanberg. Ames Tribune. A radiologist at McFarland Clinic in Ames has authored a book to help people who have a problem with food getting stuck in their esophagus when they eat. Doug Lake, MD, published the book titled, quote, Esophagus Attack, the three-step method to enjoy eating again, end quote, based on steps he developed due to his own experience with the painful, emotionally taxing medical condition. Lake's troubles with eating first began Thanksgiving 18 years ago while he was in medical school. He started the day with a turkey trot run, a holiday tradition of running a 5K, Lake said. Lake hadn't eaten much that day, and by the time the turkey feast rolled around, he was famished. He immediately reached for a piece of dark meat and took a big bite. Quote, instantly, I was like, what is this pain? What is going on? End quote, Lake said. Heart attack, acid reflux, aortic dissection, cancer. Lake quickly ticked off a list of possibilities in his head, eliminating each one with his medical training. Quote, that's when it started, he said. It was my first esophagus attack, end quote. Lake wasn't alone. More than 250,000 Americans suffer from the condition that causes food to get stuck in their esophagus, and 65,000 go to emergency rooms each year because food is stuck, the pain of which can mimic a heart attack, Lake said. Nearly 23 million Americans suffer from gastroesophageal reflux disease and are at risk to have esophagus attacks. It's a condition that causes pain, panic, and can leave people afraid and even ashamed. Quote, there are many patients who come to me as a physician, and even when they're telling me about their story, they're putting their hand up beside their mouth like it's a secret, end quote, Lake said. Though he encourages patients to share their fears. Quote, it's foundational for people to eat and for people to gather and eat, Lake said. It's what we've done for eons as humans to gather and is gather to eat, end quote. The fear that an episode could occur at a restaurant or at a dinner with friends is a major cause for concern for those who have esophagus problems. In his book, Lake walks readers through every facet of esophagus attacks. He discusses the causes, the solutions, and shares the three-step eating process he's developed that helps avoid attacks. He also has detailed instructions for what to do during an attack to help get the food unstuck. The illnesses of two of Lake's children inspired him to write the book. His four-month-old son, Ben, was hospitalized and diagnosed with pulmonary vein stenosis, PVS. After a rapid decline, Ben died on March 21, 2014. 2 years later, when the Lake's three-month-old daughter, Caroline, was also diagnosed with PVS, it caused what Lake refers to as a midlife crisis. Quote, we went to the hospital in Boston in a terrible place emotionally. We'd lost our son, Ben, and we thought we were losing Caroline, Lake said. It was really our only hope. We get there and I meet all of these physicians who are changing the world for kids with PVS and all sorts of other cardiac diseases, end quote. Boston at Children's Hospital is, quote, one of only a handful of hospitals in the world that attempt to treat PVS in children, end quote, Lake said. He and his wife, Malia, took the risk and transferred their daughter to Boston, where the treatment was successful, and now Caroline is an active five-year-old. Quote, she swings similar to a monkey from a gymnastic beam in our home, builds a Lego creation, chases her sisters, and started remote preschool this fall, end quote, Lake wrote in a statement about Caroline. As a doctor, Lake was helping people individually, but the experience in Boston caused him to ask himself, quote, what am I really doing to help people? I realized that maybe there's something more for me to do in my life, end quote, he said. For a month or two after returning from Boston, patient after patient complained to Lake that, quote, food gets stuck, end quote, which was the working title for his book. Quote, eventually I said that's what happened to me for the past 18 years, and I'd tell them the three-step process that works for me, Lake said. They'd say, can you write that down, end quote. It made Lake realize that there's a need for a book like this, especially after he searched Amazon and could not find books directly related to the issue. The experience inspired him to write, quote, Esophagus Attack, end quote, which was released Tuesday and is available online at Ames Independent Bookstore, Dog-Eared Books, dogearedbooksames.com, on Amazon, and at Burgie's Coffee Shop at Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames. Our next front page article, Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action Planned, Philip Sitter, Ames Tribune. The Ames Community School District's plan to have a Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action next week has prompted hundreds of comments in recent days across social media, as well as many shared directly with the district school board. The district's plan is to have teachers each day, February 1 through 5, engage with a set of guiding principles through age-appropriate lessons and activities, quote, to affirm all Black identities by centering Black voices, empowering students, and teaching about Black experiences beyond slavery, end quote, according to a post on the district's site. Many of the hundreds of comments on the district's Facebook post about the week of action expressed support, while others were concerned about what exactly children would be learning next week. The 13 guiding principles listed include support for or involve discussions about restorative justice, empathy, quote, loving engagement, end quote, diversity, globalism, affirmations of queer and trans people and Black women, privilege, and the challenging patriarchal and nuclear family structures in order to make spaces welcoming for all families. The district stated on its website that the Black Lives Matter at School movement is not formally affiliated with the Black Lives Matter Global Network or any other movement for Black Lives organization, but is, quote, a push to improve schools for Black students, teachers, and families, end quote. Quote, the movement is a call to schools across the nation to say and show that Black lives matter within the school walls and in the policies and practices that impact the lives and futures of Black students, end quote, the site reads. Anthony Jones, the district's equality director, told the school board Monday that, quote, we're not trying to change students and families, we're trying to fix them, but we are attempting to dismantle, to fix, and reimagine our current school environment, end quote. Jones said last year's national surge in sales of books dealing with race, racism, and white supremacy following the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police showed him, quote, there is a desire to learn about how to interact with differences of those who don't think like you, end quote. He also said that while the district's students constantly hear about racial disparities in education, survey data collected last year from the district's middle and high school students before the COVID-19 pandemic shut down schools showed that most students who responded rarely felt there were ever important discussions about race. As a district, Jones said the desire is to be, quote, intentional about expressing our care and recognizing and affirming our Black students in the district, end quote, by celebrating Black joy and success and not just discussing educational achievement gaps. He added that there were many conversations with administrators and teachers to prepare next week's topics, with different levels of resources made available depending on teachers' existing level of comfort, learning, and engagement with the topics in their classrooms. He also said it would be up to the individual schools to structure when and how much time would be devoted to the material each day. There was a lot of clear approval and no shared disapproval on Monday from Ames School Board members about the district's Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action following Jones's informational presentation. Board President Sabrina Shields Cook said, quote, we've talked so many times about a sense of belonging, and this type of work is what increases that sense of belonging, end quote. Shields Cook echoed something board member Jamit Colton had said, that queer and trans affirming work saves lives, given the rates of suicide among those groups of people. Board Vice President Michelle Lenkatis said, it's sad how little progress has been made and how people treat one another. Quote, I just think we should constantly be evolving and learning and accepting those who are different than we are, end quote. Lenkatis also acknowledged the hesitancy expressed by some community members about the week of action. Quote, anytime you're introducing things that make people uncomfortable in order to move us forward, I think it's great, and clearly based on comments on Facebook and in letters we've gotten, people are uncomfortable. That's not a bad thing, end quote. Jones's presentation and comments from the board Monday were followed by almost an hour and 45 minutes of public comments. Eve Letterhouse said she felt the district had overstepped the bounds of what's up to parents to teach their children, concerns she was not alone in virtually expressing at the meeting or elsewhere. Quote, in the same way, I am not in the place to tell any of you how to raise your own children. Please stop making decisions that are doing the same to us, end quote, Letterhouse said. While she said her family embraces diversity of thought, quote, and like you, we teach our child to love all people no matter how they look, think, or act, end quote. She was concerned the sections of next week's curriculum that focus on affirming trans and queer people are contrary to what her family believes about human sexuality and family values. Jen Hibben, a local pastor and elementary school parent, characterized all opposition to the week of action, no matter the opposition's stated concerns, as rooted in racism and bigotry. quote, that opposition has made it so abundantly clear why we need this programming, why there's a need for Black Lives Matter at school, end quote, Hibbins said. She added that it's the district's responsibility to have a school environment that's safe for all children, and the opposition to the week of action shows the lack of safety for all students due to racism, transphobia, and homophobia. Genia Coffey, a middle school teacher and elementary school parent, gave support for the week of action on behalf of the Ames Youth and School Action Team, which she described as a, quote, nonpartisan and apolitical group of concerned citizens with allies across the Ames community, end quote, formed in 4 years ago to expose racial and ethnic disparities in the district. Coffey added that, quote, the fight against racism is not for students of color alone or for individual families or for the targeted communities, end quote. Our next front page article, City Council votes to allow eminent domain use, by Danielle Gare, Ames Tribune. The Ames City Council voted 5-1 to allow eminent domain use for a flood mitigation project, though the city will first pursue purchasing the land. Since the Federal Emergency Management Agency granted $3.7 million to fund the project, the council is required to hold a public forum on potential eminent domain use. The project, which will mitigate flooding along Squaw Creek near the South Duff Avenue Bridge, will require total acquisition of two properties and will impact seven other properties. One business owner, Jim Ho of Ho Welding, and his wife, Piper Wall, expressed their concerns with the project at Tuesday's city council meeting. Quote, I'm sure I'm kind of a fly in the ointment here, but I guess a couple of things that concern me is we keep building up and building up, but now we want to solve the problem, Ho said. I'm sure we're going to lose on this deal, but we have to... But we have got to quit building on a floodplain if we are trying to mitigate flood problems, end quote. Howe said he is concerned the project will cause more flooding issues for their neighbors downstream, but Ames Municipal Engineer Tracy Peterson said the city will pursue future projects to resolve this issue. Council member Tim Garten asked if the functionality of Howe Welding would be impacted by losing the portion of the property needed to complete flood mitigation. Peterson said everything within the impacted area is movable. Wall referenced a 2016 email they received from the city that said there would be opportunities to address specific concerns with the plans. Quote, we're now in January 2021 without specific plans, end quote, Wall said. Peterson said at the meeting their team is very close to finishing the plans but is fine-tuning the hydraulic model. A property owner in the area, Gary Schweiger of Cedar Rapids, said Peterson and other city staff members have been, quote, quite responsive, end quote, to his questions. Schweiger owns RL Enterprises and leases the property where Red Lobster is located. Schweiger will lose roughly 16 parking spaces, he said, where a retaining wall is planned. Quote, I understand the reason for the mitigation project, Schweiger said. I am concerned how I will be remunerated for the loss of my property, or at least part of my property, and the long-term effect on what is really a nicely situated commercial property, end quote. The city will work with appraisers before deciding on an offer for property owners, Peterson said. Quote, our intent is to pursue voluntary settlement and to negotiate with people, end quote, Peterson said. Wall said she is against the use of eminent domain in this circumstance because it does not benefit the community but a set of businesses. Ames City Attorney Mark Lampert said the use of eminent domain for this project would serve a public purpose, making the use legal. Councilmember Gloria Betcher, who consistently voted against the project aside from accepting FEMA funding, was the one dissenting vote. For city documents, council agendas, and information on future meetings, visit cityofames.com for more information. Find recordings of past meetings on or watch future meetings live at youtube.com/AmesChannel12. And our last front page article, Iowans Celebrate a Wonderful Life with Donna Reed Day, by Isaac Hamlet, Iowa City Press Citizen. If you find it impossible to believe Donna Reed was an Iowa-born farm girl, don't worry. Lionel Barrymore once made the same mistake. Quote, her favorite story was she and Lionel Barrymore had done a film, and they were talking in between takes, and he could not believe she was a farm girl, end quote. Mary Owen, Reed's daughter, recalled recently in an interview with the Iowa City Press Citizen. Quote, somehow he bet $50 that she couldn't milk a cow, and somehow they found a cow. She said it was the easiest $50 she'd ever made, end quote. Wednesday marks that what would have been Donna Reed's 100th birthday. She died of pancreatic cancer just before her 65th in 1986. The actress is most well known for her role as the leading lady in the 1946 Christmas classic, quote, It's a Wonderful Life, end quote. And yet her legacy reaches beyond the silver screen, which is part of the reason that Reed is being recognized this week by her state of origin. Quote, Reed was an early trailblazer who showed women of all ages that they can be business leaders, movie stars, and advocates for their passion, end quote, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said before signing the proclamation. Quote, and also mothers, wives, and contributors to their communities, we're really proud to call her and her family our own, end quote. Owen, one of Reed's four children, recently moved to Iowa City from New York, a move inspired not only by an interest in celebrating her mother's centennial, but also by her attraction to Iowa City itself, particularly the local indie movie theater. In the interest of celebrating not only her centennial, but the 75th anniversary of her most recognizable work, the Press Citizen spoke with Owen about her mother and her own history of presenting her mother's movie each Christmas in theaters across the country. Quote, I love living here, but one of the main draws after coming from New York is the independent theaters, is that film scene is here, end quote, Owen said. She became acquainted with Iowa City and the nonprofit theater in 2019 when she came to the its then recently opened Chauncey location to present, quote, It's a Wonderful Life. I thought my mother's centennial is next year. Even if I just live here for a year, I'm going to participate in the centennial and really make sure the state remembers her, end quote. Even as she was making the decision to migrate to eastern Iowa, Owen didn't know that plans were already in motion to make sure her mother would get a day all to herself. Remembering Donna Reed from here to eternity, she was born Donna Bell Mullinger from a farm about 6 miles southeast of Denison, Iowa, on January 27, 1921, the oldest of five children of William and Hazel Mullinger. She went to school in a little red schoolhouse just across the street from the family farm. She graduated from Denison High School in 1938. When she was deciding what college to attend, her aunt Mildred invited her to move to L.A. and attend Los Angeles City College. While she was there, the college established its first beauty contest. She entered and won, which got her picture into the LA Times. Despite interest from modeling agents, she finished college before signing an 8-year contract with MGM in 1941 when she was 20 and taking on the screen name of Donna Reed. Quote, over those 8 years, she became known very quickly as the girl next door, and quote, Alicia Malone, a host for Turner Classic Movies and a lifelong fan of Reed, told the Press Citizen, quote, she's always brought such warmth and kindness to all her roles, but like many Hollywood actresses of the time, she wasn't able to do all that much in terms of variety. She was at the behest of the studio, end quote. That would start to change when she started to catch momentum playing a Navy nurse in John Ford's, quote, They Were Expendable, end quote, in 1945. Around that same time, she married Tony Owen, who was a film producer and her agent. Despite the breakthrough, Reed wasn't director Frank Capra's first choice to play Mary Hatch Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. The role was originally going to Jean Arthur or Ginger Rogers, but when neither was available, she got the call. The movie wasn't an immediate success, but it was an early step on the road to her Academy Award in 1954 for, quote, Best Supporting Actress, end quote, for her performance in, quote, From Here to Eternity, end quote. The film won a total of 8 Oscars that year, including Best Picture and Best Supporting Actor, which went to leading man Frank Sinatra. By the time Mary Owen was born in 1957, Reed had largely completed her work on the silver screen. By then, Reed was focused on launching, quote, The Donna Reed Show, end quote, with her husband after the pair had started a production company of their own called Towden Productions. Quote, she was producing her own show back in the 50s and 60s, and I think the only other woman doing that was Lucille Ball, end quote, said Liz Gilman, the executive producer of Produce Iowa, the film branch of the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs. The show, which began airing in 1958, was a sitcom starring Reed and Carl Betts as the heads of the middle-class Stone family. Over its 8-year run, the beloved TV hit would get 4 Emmy nominations and earn her a Golden Globe for Best Female TV Star in 1963. Despite the hecticness of a Hollywood life that came with regular TV production, Owen said her mother would go out of her way to be a parent to her 4 kids. Quote, people asked me, what did she think of working with Montgomery Clift? And I don't know, end quote, Owen said, referring to her one of her mother's co-stars in, quote, From Here to Eternity. She really did try to close the door and be a mom at home, end quote. While growing up, Owen would spend most of her time in California, where the family was primarily based. She lived down the street from Phil Silvers and the makers of, quote, The Sound of Music, end quote. But roughly once a year, the family would leave it all behind for a few weeks back in Denison. Owen recalls summers spent with her cousins, swimming in the river, biking around town, and putting coins on railroad tracks. She remembers those times feeling very, quote, real and grounding, end quote, compared to life in L.A. Quote, in Beverly Hills, especially during the time of the television show, there were tourists just driving by the house, she said. When you're a little kid, who wants to share their mother with strangers, end quote. In the 60s, Reed would also help found Another Mother for Peace, a nonpartisan anti-Vietnam War group. Public opinion of the Vietnam War had not yet tilted toward disapproval, but she faced some blowback for the decision. As the state of Iowa celebrates her mother's centennial, Owen hopes that, despite the pandemic, she and the state's Department of Cultural Affairs can find ways to screen some of her mother's films virtually. In for future years, she hopes to continue to see her mother remembered on her birthday. Quote, I would love for all the cities in Iowa to do something, Owen said, whether it's an online little film festival or just go around talking about her, end quote. A wonderful life. Much in the same way the movie imagines a world in which George Bailey was never born, it's easy to imagine a world in which, quote, it's a wonderful life, end quote, never became a part of the cultural lexicon the way it has today. Perhaps due to a clerical error, the film's copyright lapsed in 1974, giving American broadcast networks the ability to throw it on their airwaves as many times as they wanted, royalty-free throughout the holiday season. Quote, it's become part of the public library, and it was able to be played again and again. Through replation, people started to really enjoy it, said Malone, the TCM host. It's become the kind of Christmas classic that we watch every year, end quote. By the time the film rights were reestablished by Republic Records Pictures in the early 90s, the movie had already impressed itself upon a generation through endless TV reruns, elevating a movie that might have fallen through the cracks of film history to become nothing more than an obscure tidbit. Today, it's not uncommon to see it on a list of some of the most well-regarded films of all time, shoulder-to-shoulder with likes of Citizen Kane and Casablanca. The movie tells the story of Bailey, a businessman who loses faith in himself and in humanity. George is saved, however, when an angel shows him an alternative world in which he never existed. Quote, while Jimmy Stewart has the male lead, Reed's character, Mary Bailey, is the one really who saves the day, end quote, said Leo Landis, the curator for the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs and a force behind the newly instated, quote, Donna Reed Day, end quote. She organizes the efforts to save the building and the bank, and when Billy loses the money, it's Mary Bailey, Donna Reed's character, who does all the organizing, end quote. Much like the success of the film itself, Owen said holiday screenings at New York's IFC Cinema did not get traction right away either. When the theater first started screening the Christmas classic in mid-August, attendance was relatively sparse. It was only in 2008, after the New York Times published an article on the screenings titled, quote, Wonderful, Sorry George, It's a Pitiful, Dreadful Life, end quote, a critical look at the classic film, that theaters began to really fill up. Quote, the author had grown up in the 80s and he had a teacher who'd shown him the movie all the time and he was kind of a punk, but it filled the theater, end quote, Owen said. Quote, and after that, it's sold out every year since. They show it for 3 weeks now, end quote. Around the same time, staff at the New York Theater found out that Owen was living in the city and asked her to screen the film for their patrons. When she first started, she says she had a stage fright, but she soon found a rhythm. She thanks the crowd for coming, often, she noted, because there will have been a blizzard, then reminds the audience that It's a Wonderful Life was an independent film and that she did not see the movie for the first time until she was in her 20s, when one of her college friends insisted she watch it. She'll also share anecdotes about her mother, like the fact that she had, quote, a strong softball arm from growing up in Iowa, end quote, which meant she didn't need a stunt double for the film's rock-throwing scene. After that, Iowan often reads from a letter or two among the hundreds written by soldiers in World War II to her mother, who had become a pinup girl for many. Quote, I could tell from the reading of the letter that this was an incredible moral booster like no other, end quote, Owen said. due to the pandemic, the Christmas was the first in over a decade where Owen did not spend at least part of the season introducing It's a Wonderful Life to a new crowd of moviegoers. Still, in the years she's presented the film, she has firsthand knowledge of how central the movie is in the lives of countless modern filmgoers. Quote, people are in a very emotional state at the end of the movie, and they usually share incredible stories about how they watched it with their dad and he just died. They say, I came here 3 years ago with my boyfriend and now we're married, she said. It's not fan stuff, it's just heartfelt. Everyone has a very deep relationship with the film, end quote. A day for Donna Reed in Iowa. Although Reed's adult life was undoubtedly adorned with glitz and glamour of Hollywood, she was and remains a daughter of Dennison. Quote, what I really need to emphasize is her good Iowa values, end quote, Dennison Mayor Pam Soseman said. Quote, Iowans are self-sufficient, and Donna was self-sufficient. She was a woman well ahead of her time doing what she did with Toden Productions, with The Donna Reed Show, end quote. All through her life, Reed remembered Dennison, and upon her death, Dennison remembered her. The town of roughly 8,000 has memorialized her through the Donna Reed Foundation, which includes a museum, a theater, and a nonprofit that's dedicated to advancing the performing arts. Quote, her vision was for education, and that's part of the foundation's work is to make sure there is always a portion of education affiliated with that foundation does, end quote, Soseman said. The foundation has also given scholarships to burgeoning artists and performers. Names from CW Iowa 23 host Jackie Shillman to Broadway Brandon Victor Dixon, quote, The Color Purple, Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert, end quote, and Tony winner Santonio Fontana, quote, Tootsie Frozen, end quote, have benefited from her legacy. For the first 32 years of its life, the organization held a Donna Reed Festival and a more extensive workshop program, but both came to an end in 2009. Quote, the festival definitely went into a rapid decline after 9/11, Soseman said. Parents would put their child on a plane to fly to what they thought of as Nowhere, USA, and not knowing their child was going, you saw a decline, end quote. While Dennison's residents have long been fans of Reed, efforts to get a, quote, Donna Reed Day, end quote, began with the State Cultural Affairs Department last year as part of a celebration of film history in Iowa in the state's 175th statehood anniversary this year. Quote, we wanted to acknowledge people who had a strong Iowa connection in film, said Landis, the department's director. We've wanted to share her story as a prominent Iowan and a prominent actor, end quote. Owen remembers not wanting to share her mother as a child, but today she sifts through letters, presents, films, and shares anecdotes from her mother's life, all in the interest of keeping her mother's memory alive. Quote, of course she belongs to Hollywood in a way, Owen said, but she really is Iowa's daughter, end quote. Coronavirus. Additional 31 cases confirmed in county by Isabella Rosario, Ames Tribune. Another 31 new COVID-19 cases were confirmed in Story County from Tuesday to Wednesday, the state's coronavirus website showed at 10 a.m. Wednesday. At that time, state officials reported 8,870 positive cases in Story County, up from Tuesday's total of 8,839. No new deaths were reported. To date, a total of 38 Story County residents have died as a result of COVID-19, according to Iowa's coronavirus website. COVID-19 is the respiratory disease caused by the coronavirus. Of those who have tested positive for the virus in Story County, 7,984 individuals have recovered, according to the state. As of Wednesday, Story County's 14-day average positivity rate is 6%, the same as the day prior. To date, a total of 49,055 Story County residents have been tested for the virus. Across Iowa, an additional 1,104 positive cases and 8 deaths were reported Wednesday morning. At 10 a.m. Wednesday, the state was reporting 4,500 COVID-19-related deaths, an increase of 8 deaths since the state's tally at 10 a.m. Tuesday, according to the state's website. The state was reported at 10 a.m. Wednesday that there are 315,170 confirmed cases of coronavirus, an increase of 1,104 since 10 a.m. Tuesday. The total number of people tested is 1,455,742, according to the state. Of the people who have tested positive, 277,830 have recovered. The Ames Tribune uses data from the Iowa Department of Public Health to report daily totals of Iowans and Story County residents tested for the coronavirus and those who have tested positive for the virus each day. Since the pandemic began in the spring, the state has made changes and corrections to how it reports that data, and the data does not always agree with the numbers reported from other sources. It doesn't look like there's any obituaries today, just one death notice. Lyman K. Rule, age 91, town Ziering. Death date, January 25th. Arrangements, Frederickville funeral and cremation care. Moving to sports, R.S. Freshman Bloom, a rising star on the mat, by Joe Randleman, Ames Tribune. It took Roland Story freshman Cade Bloom a couple of years to warm up to the sport, but once he got hooked, there was no keeping off the wrestling mat. Bloom has taken the high school wrestling world by storm. He is ranked 5th at 106 pounds in Class 2A by the predicament and just won a Heart of Iowa Conference title last Friday at the conference meet. Bloom's 12-3 major decision win over Nevada's Caden Weber in the finals of the HOIC meet put him at 29-0 on the season. Quote, I knew that he would do very well coming into the season because he has put in so much time on the mat, but to still be undefeated at this point of the season is just incredible, and quote, Roland Story head coach Leland Schwartz said. Quote, Cade's dedication to wrestling is second to none. He loves the sport and always wants to improve. It's something that he takes very seriously, but he also has fun practicing and competing. He's also been a great teammate, helping others around him to improve, end quote. Even though he's just a freshman, Bloom has much wrestling experience as many high school veterans. He's been traveling all over the country wrestling since grade school, winning a couple of AAU and grade school state titles, as well as a USA state title in sixth grade. Quote, that boy has got it, Bloom's father, Jeff, said. He's understood the sport since a young age, end quote. At first, Bloom wasn't that into wrestling. He started in kindergarten, but it wasn't until second grade that he started taking things seriously. Quote, when I took sixth at state for Pee-wee, I thought I could be pretty good at it, end quote, Bloom said. Bloom soon developed a competitive edge that led to his tremendous success in grade school and junior high. Quote, I like how hard wrestling is, Bloom said. Most people can't deal with the pain and the hard work you have to put into it, end quote. He's worked tirelessly at improving his craft. When he wasn't wrestling in the North Force Youth Wrestling Club out of Story City or the Seabolt Wrestling Academy, where he still wrestles, Bloom was traveling to Virginia Beach, Tulsa, Las Vegas, and several other locations across the country. Quote, I'd have to throw darts at a map, end quote, Jeff Bloom said. Quote, we've been about everywhere, end quote. Cade said Las Vegas and Virginia Beach have been his favorite locations to wrestle. He wrestled in Vegas last year and Virginia Beach every year since fifth grade. Quote, I love doing that, Bloom said. I like being able to go to new places and wrestle new people, end quote. The COVID-19 pandemic has limited his travel this past year. It's also put a hamper on how much time he can get on the mat at the club level. But that hasn't slowed him down a bit. In November, Bloom took it upon himself to open his own club and begin coaching younger kids. Quote, I've been wanting to coach and start my own club for a long time, Bloom said. My dad and I talked about it when the opportunity came and I jumped on it, end quote. Bloom coaches his younger brother, Connor, and some of his friends. They convene at an old auction house owned by his grandfather and Roland. They have one full mat with a rope, pegboard, and pull-up bar. It's simple, but he loves the freedom of running his own club at such a young age. Quote, I like to just be able to say I can drive to my own wrestling room with my father and do whatever I want, end quote, Bloom said. Of course, Bloom is nowhere near done growing as a wrestler himself. Quote, he's still learning on what he can get away with at the high school level, Schwartz said. There's a bit of an adjustment for all freshmen when they get into high school, and they have to learn that some of the moves that worked in youth wrestling won't work against the best high school wrestlers, end quote. Bloom's biggest strength in wrestling from his feet. He excels at the high crotch and single leg takedowns. Quote, I need to work on being better on bottom, end quote, Bloom said. He'd also like to put on a little extra weight. Bloom is undersized, even for the 106-pound class. But anything Bloom lacks in size or strength, he more than makes up for with his mental toughness and desire. Quote, my biggest strength is my mindset, end quote, Bloom said. Quote, believing in yourself and knowing you can go out there and beat anybody is a powerful thing, end quote. Roland Story begins its postseason February 6th with the 2A sectional meet in Iowa Falls. Bloom plans on taking one step at a time toward his ultimate goal. Quote, I want to make it to state and move forward, Bloom said. I'm looking for a championship, end quote. Our next article, Why Junior LB Immane Decided on Iowa State by Matthew Bain, Des Moines Register. There were a lot of reasons for Jacob Immane to pick Iowa. The Sergeant Bluff Lutton linebacker, who's ranked number 6 in the Register's in-state 2022 recruiting rankings and number 1 among linebackers, grew up as a Hawkeye fan, at least when he was a little kid. His older brother, Alex Immane, played for the Hawkeyes as a preferred walk-on in 2012. Iowa also has a strong tradition at linebacker, with 5 former players at the position currently playing in the NFL: Urban Dale's Jaden Harrell, Xavier's Ethan Hurkett, Cedar Falls' Jack Campbell, and Iowa City's West Dylan Doyle. All of the state's top-ranked linebackers since the 2018 class picked Iowa, but Immane bucked that trend. When Immane picked Iowa State over Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas State on January 21st, he became the first Iowan with offers from both the Cyclones and Hawkeyes to choose Iowa State since Creston offensive lineman Trevor Downing in 2018. Immane hopes he and other in-state talents start to shift the recruiting balance of power toward Matt Campbell and the Cyclones in the coming years. Quote, honestly, I wanted to be that kind of curveball and not just choose the traditional program, and Immane it told the Register this week. I really felt like Iowa State really prioritized me. Obviously, I loved the Iowa offer, and that would have been a great place to go. But Iowa State just prioritized me so much and made me feel like an asset. It was really a no-brainer, end quote. Immane is Iowa State's first recruit in the 2022 class. Although he's a significant Cyclones victory, Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes are still ahead in the head-to-head race. The first 2022 recruit is Southeast Valley defensive end Aaron Graves, who's 4 spots ahead of Immane at number 2 in the Register's latest in-state 2022 recruiting rankings. Here's how Iowa State got its biggest in-state recruiting win of Campbell's tenure. Iowa State's winning is making a mark. Immane said he basically knew he wanted to commit to Iowa State since late December, but watching the team's dominant Fiesta Bowl win over Oregon sealed the deal. Quote, that's just set it in stone, and quote, the 6'2", 205-pounder said, quote, just the fact that their program has really come from nothing in the last 4 or 5 years, and now they're in the New Year's Six Bowl, that's just crazy. They would lose a couple bad games a year in recent years, but you would see them beating these top-ranked teams like TCU and Oklahoma. You started to wonder, hey, are these guys actually going to be the real deal? And then this year, they really proved it, end quote. Immane also said he was impressed with how many of Iowa State's remain contributors chose to return next season, even those with chances to get picked in the NFL draft. Quote, it just shows that all these guys, they're really tight with each other and want to play for each other and want to play for Coach Campbell, he said. That really says something because with a lot of these teams, obviously you'd want to take your shot at the NFL, but I think these guys trust the program and they think if they stay on one more year, their draft stock will jump even higher, end quote. Immane appreciated the Cyclones' recruiting style. For one thing, Immane said he always felt like a priority to Iowa State. Since extending Immane his first offer during his sophomore year, linebackers coach Tyson Veit and player personnel director Derek Hoodiger were in constant contact, he said, and he had a one-on-one Zoom visit with Campbell this week before committing. Iowa started to get involved in October after Nebraska became Immane's second offer. He said he would talk occasionally with linebacker coaches Seth Wallace and recruiting coordinator Tyler Barnes, but he didn't feel as important to Iowa as he did with Iowa State or even Nebraska. In the end, it really came down to the Cyclones or Huskers. Perhaps more important in Immane's decision, though, was Iowa State's recruiting style, and he thinks that style will help Campbell secure more in-state recruiting victories. Immane said the Cyclones coaches felt younger and more personable. To him, that aspect mattered. Quote, it was a huge impact, and I think that's why Iowa State's going to start chipping away at some of Iowa's recruits, he said, because kids nowadays like the more personable guys. They're more in touch and build better relationships, and I think all kids just like everything about that, end quote. An important conversation with Campbell. During his Zoom call with Campbell, Immane asked the question everyone is asking, are you going to stay in Ames? Immane said Campbell's answer was essentially, it would take something out of this world to take me away from what we're building here at Iowa State, and that was good enough for Immane to commit. Quote, he was just saying, yeah, we know opportunities come up and things can happen, but we're super dedicated to Ames and we all have our kids growing up here. At this point, I don't think Coach Campbell would go just about anywhere, Emmings said. The way that he talks and the way he answers everything, you can tell he's just a great guy. All his answers are just very heartfelt and you can really tell that he's a very sincere guy, end quote. Moving to the opinion page, Your Turn article by Jennifer C. Baraka's guest columnist, Protect Freedom of Association for Nonprofit Donors. Millions of Americans today are afraid to express their opinions on matters of public importance. A summer poll by the Cato Institute found that 62% of Americans were afraid to reveal their opinions. Nearly one-third, 32% of employed Americans feared that they would lose their job or miss out on career opportunities if their views became known. Out of fear of harassment or social banishment, many donors to certain causes prefer to make their gifts anonymously. Unfortunately, some politicians today want to require charities to turn over their donor list to the state. Democratic politicians in California, New York, and New Jersey have been particularly aggressive in their attempts to force nonprofits to reveal the names and addresses of their top donors, in some cases for publication on the internet. Although proponents of donor disclosure laws claim they are needed to combat fraud, state officials already possess the power to subpoena donor information in conjunction with specific investigations, making bulk collection unnecessary. Politicians may be seeking donor information in order to expose those who oppose their pet causes or to create informal enemy lists. And in the internet era, can there be any doubt that even well-intentioned donor disclosure laws will be compromised by hackers, leakers, or sheer incompetence? This term, the Supreme Court has a chance to clarify that such laws violate the First Amendment right of free association. On January 8th, the court agreed to take up two cases that challenge California's donor disclosure policy. California requires any charitable organization that raises money in the state to turn over private information of their major donors, even those that reside outside of California. An Americans for Prosperity Foundation versus Becerra and Thomas More Law Center versus Becerra, two center-right 501c3 organizations refused to turn over donor information to the state and took then California Attorney General Kamala Harris to court. A trial revealed that the California Attorney General's office, quote, systematically failed to maintain the confidentiality, end quote, of donor information collected and that past contributors to the organization suffered, quote, public threats, harassments, intimidation, and retaliation, end quote, on account of their association with the groups. Ultimately, the trial court ruled that California's bulk disclosure requirement violates the First Amendment, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed. The High Court will weigh in this spring. If the Supreme Court applies its earlier precedents, it is likely to side with the charitable organizations. In the 1995 case of McKintry versus Ohio Elections Commission, the court affirmed the First Amendment right to publish political pamphlets anonymously, striking down a state requirement that authors of pamphlets concerning public issues reveal their names. And in the landmark 1958 case of NAACP versus Alabama, the court unanimously held that the state may not compel groups to hand over their membership list, as disclosure could expose members, quote, to economic reprisal, loss of employment, threat of physical coercion, and other manifestations of public hostility, end quote. Supporters of donor disclosure laws claim that the NAACP case was decided in the context of white supremacist violence and does not apply to the current cases, but the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund supported the two conservative nonprofit groups before the Ninth Circuit, arguing that failure to apply the precedent here would gravely harm civil rights groups and other progressive organizations, and nonprofits from across the ideological spectrum oppose such laws as a threat to their ability to fundraise their right. Like the fight for American independence, the absolutist movement, the quest for women's suffrage, and the American civil rights movement, most causes or social movements today on the right and left depend in part on the support of anonymous donations in the era of cancel culture, doxing, computer hacking, and cyberbullying. The Supreme Court must protect our right to join and support unpopular groups anonymously. American civic life depends on it. Again, that Your Turn opinion. It came from Jennifer C. Berceras, who is director of Independent Women's Law Center and a former member of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. The next Your Turn article, Too Little Too Late, The Elephant Has Left the House, by Walter Souza, guest columnist. Dear GOP lawmakers, some of you have asked for forgiveness for your complicity in an attempt to disenfranchise Black voters. Nice try. Your sorry sounds awfully disingenuous. It's hard to believe you're sorry when you remain silent as Republican legislators across the country are calling for voting restrictions that would affect Black voters. It's hard to believe that you're sorry when hundreds of you still refuse to admit that Joe Biden won the election. It's hard to believe that you're sorry when you continue to deny that white supremacy and systemic racism exist in America. It's hard to believe you're sorry after you failed to question a former president's elimination of diversity training needed to remedy race relations. It's hard to believe that you're finally seeing the light to recognize the elephant in your party. Your sorry is a little too late because you failed to spot the elephant. The elephant sneaked out of the White House, went on a rampage, and almost toppled our democracy. You could have stopped the elephant, but you didn't. Instead, you turned your eyes away as it wallowed in the floors of Congress. It's so sad you accepted such a gift from Trump, a gift that was once a baby elephant, so you chose not to bother that it might grow into a behemoth. You even retrained its baby name, quote, alternative facts, end quote. What you failed to realize was that, quote, alternative facts, end quote, was carrying a virus called disinformation, which ultimately infected many of your party. You enabled a president to feed lies to baby, quote, alternative facts, end quote, until it grew into a raging bull. You held super spreader events that spread disinformation on social media and your favorite TV networks. The media replayed and replayed pictures of baby, quote, alternative facts, end quote, and your followers fell in love with the animal. Disinformation made those it infected want to believe that the adult alternative facts would remain a cute baby elephant. As a result, alternative facts went viral and found a home in millions of hearts across America. There were always signs that alternative facts was not a beast to mess with, but you and your friends looked away and pretended not to hear its trumpet announcing carnage. Because you ignored the beast, you failed to find help from fact checkers to return alternative facts back to the wild, wild world of conspiracy theories. Even though COVID-19 is real, the trunk of alternative facts was marked just a flu. You weren't bothered by the inscription, "Take back your country," on its tusks. You weren't bothered by the inscription, "The border wall will prevent loss of American jobs," on its ears. You weren't bothered by the "Election will be rigged," written on its backside. So alternative facts continues to spread disinformation across the country like a wildfire. And sadly, 72% of Republicans don't believe that Joe Biden's victory is legitimate. The country is struggling to tame the beast, and each time we catch it, it pretends to be sorry, so we let it go. But alternative facts has trampled all levers of civil discourse and tilted them toward disharmony and incivility. And the nation has become more polarized because we allowed the elephant to roam the White House and floors of the Congress. Quote, "This was a stolen election. There will be a price sooner or later," end quote, said a Trump supporter. Quote, "I feel like it was people like Antifa, people like Black Lives Matter, who infiltrated the crowd and caused some problems," end quote, blamed another Trump supporter after the insurrection. "And there will be a price to pay for your complicity. Quote, I will definitely be very upset. I don't think that I will ever vote again," end quote, a Trump supporter warned if they discovered that, quote, "Stop the Steal," end quote, was a lie. So now, what are you going to do? If you are truly sorry, you must seek courage to speak to your supporters that alternative facts is a lie they must reject. There was never a scheme to steal their votes. If you are truly sorry, you must reach across the aisle to work with your colleagues in blue to fight the pandemic, upgrade the infrastructure, repair the economy, fix immigration, address criminal justice reform, protect voting rights. If you are truly sorry, you must denounce, quote, alternative facts and advise your constituents to watch out for its presence inside their homes. If you are truly sorry, you must speak to your followers that hard work lies ahead to unite the country to ensure that alternative facts will never return to the Oval Office. Again, that Your Turn opinion came from Walter Souza of Ames, Iowa, who writes frequently on the intersections of spirituality, anti-racism, and social justice. For our political cartoon today, we have a house of cards. So there is like a wood beam, it looks like, that says Trump policies. And on top of that wood beam is just a bunch of playing cards stacked together, one on top of each other. So it creates a house of cards. Now, at the very top of the house of cards is Trump's hair, just his hair, that's kind of blowing in the wind. And then we have Joe Biden taking a blow dryer to the house of cards and blowing it away. Moving back to local news, Senate bill gives parents option to hold child back a grade by Samantha Hernandez, Des Moines Register. Parents could request their child be held back a grade in an effort to help students who have fallen behind academically under a bill introduced this week. If it becomes law, Iowa would allow parents or caregivers to submit written requests before August 15th to hold children from advancing during the 2021-2022 school year if they feel their children did not progress enough academically during the current school year. The measure, introduced by State Senator Tony Bisigiano, is one of the legislators' responses to student learning declines in the wake of COVID-19 education disruptions. If it becomes law during the beginning of the 2021-2022 school year, if teachers and administrators can show children are making expected progress, parents could withdraw the request to hold the child back. The students would then move to the next grade. Parents would be granted the ability to use that option from July 1 through June 30th, 2022. Bisigiano, Democrat of Des Moines, said he felt compelled to introduce the measure because he has constituents who are low-income Iowans or immigrants and have struggled with educating their children and finding quality child care during the pandemic. Quote, I have a lot of underprivileged kids that are struggling through this year, as everyone has, he said. But I want to emphasize that there's always, in bad times, the people that suffer the worst is the children who don't speak English and struggling to speak English or other language, end quote. He acknowledged schools are trained to teach children to move them on the next grade, but due to COVID-19, students in their earlier grades may not be learning the necessary basics. Quote, I'm very concerned because education isn't something you can basically take a year off, Bisigiano said. It's just one more tool for the parent to put in their toolbox to help their children succeed. That's our goal this year, end quote. Dave Wilkerson, Government Relations Director for the School Administrations of Iowa, said his group echoes Bisigiano's concern about loss of student learning during the pandemic. But he said parents have always had the ability to request their child be held back. The group registered as undecided on the bill. During this time, as an educator, he never saw a request turned down, Wilkinson said. Quote, while I very much appreciate the sentiments of and what we're trying to accomplish here, I really wonder if there's a need for legislation to address it, or if we can trust our educators and administrators to do the right thing anyways, Wilkerson said, end quote. The Iowa Association of Schools Board and Rural School Advocates of Iowa also registered as undecided on the bill. Moving students mid-year, once they are deemed to have caught up, can also cause problems, said Emily Piper, lobbyist for Iowa Association of School Boards. Quote, that functionally doesn't work very well because they won't be on the same level in terms of the coursework. It affects our staffing and class size decisions, end quote, Piper said. Senators Jeff Taylor, Republican of Sioux Center, and Chris Corner, Republican of LeClaire, both okayed the bill to move forward to committee. Quote, I would say that we have a theme for this session already is certainly parent choice, isn't it? End quote, Cornoyer said. Our next article, woman loses appeal in death of neglect infant, William Morris, Des Moines Register. The mother of an infant who died caked in filth and maggots has lost her bid to overturn her conviction for murder. Cheyenne Harris, 23, and Zachary Cohen, 31, were both convicted of first-degree murder and child endangerment, causing death after their nearly four-month-old son, Sterling Cohen, was found dead in a swing in their Alta Vista, Iowa apartment. The infant's diaper and clothing were soaked through with urine and feces and infested with flies and maggots, and prosecutors believe the child had been left in the swing for 10 to 14 days before his death of malnourishment, dehydration, and infection. Cohen and Harris were both sentenced to life in prison. At trial, Harris presented testimony from a doctor who found she was suffering from major depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and serious substance abuse of methamphetamine to support her attorney's argument that Sterling's death was an accident. On appeal, though, she argued the court should have allowed her, based on that testimony, to present a broader defense of insanity or diminished mental capacity, and that her previous attorney provided ineffective counsel by failing to present that argument in court. On Thursday, a 3-judge appellate panel rejected her argument. Harris not only did not seek to present a diminished capacity defense at trial, but her attorney specifically told the court they were not going to do so, and a defendant cannot raise new claims on appeal not ruled on at trial, the court said. Harris's case, quote, is inconsistent with the position she took in the district court. She cannot change horses in midstream, end quote, Judge Anuradha Veswatharan wrote for the court. Nor did that failure represent a failure by her trial lawyer, the court said, since Iowa law does not permit a defense of diminished mental capacity for the charges she faced. Quote, trial counsel did not breach an essential duty in failing to advocate for a change in the law, end quote, the court wrote. Harris's appeal concludes 2 months after her co-defendant, Zachary Cohen, also lost his appeal in the case. U.S. issues domestic terrorism warning by Ben Fox and Eric Tucker, Associated Press, Washington. The Department of Homeland Security issued a national terrorism bulletin Wednesday warning of the potential for lingering violence from people motivated by anti-government sentiment after President Joe Biden's election, suggesting the January 6th riot at the Capitol may embolden extremists and set the stage for additional attacks. The department did not cite a specific threat, but pointed to a, quote, heightened threat environment across the United States, end quote, that it believes, quote, will persist, end quote, for weeks after Biden's inauguration the week prior. Quote, information suggests that some ideologically motivated violent extremists with objections to the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition, as well as others' perceived grievances fueled by false narratives, could continue to mobilize to incite or commit violence, end quote, the bulletin said. It did not mention any single ideological or political affiliation, while noting the potential for violence from, quote, a broad range of ideologically motivated actors, end quote. The alert was issued by Acting Homeland Security Secretary David Pakosky. Biden's nominee for the cabinet post, Alejandro Mayorkas, has not been confirmed by the Senate. Moving to 50 states, Iowa-Des Moines state lawmakers are considering allowing dentists to administer the COVID-19 vaccine and flu shots. Illinois-Chicago, Chicago public schools should allow students back into classrooms in no more than 100 facilities, then gradually reopen others, an organization of school principals proposed Wednesday, saying most of them doubt the district can safely handle a mass reopening. Missouri O'Fallon, Governor Mike Parson plans to divert thousands of unused doses of COVID-19 vaccine from CVS and Walgreens pharmacies to other state-enrolled vaccinators to help the slower-than-expected vaccination process, his spokeswoman said Wednesday. Nebraska, Omaha. Officials in the Omaha area are allocating $10 million of unspent federal coronavirus aid for rent, food aid, and mental health services. Douglas County officials have said many people who need help with rent weren't able to meet federal relief requirements, the Omaha World Herald reports. Wisconsin-Madison, the state will become one of only 10 in the U.S. without statewide mask mandates if the Assembly votes as scheduled Thursday to overturn Governor Tony Evers' order that masks will still be required in some of its largest cities thanks to local ordinances. And that does it for today's reading of the Ames Tribune for Thursday, January 28th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.